Okay, so let's jump right in. So let's start off with introducing the heads team. So my name is Veronica. I am a sophomore in Mather. Brian over there is a senior in Winthrop. And Professor Malin actually used to live in Mather, fun fact, and is now the professor of the course. Wonderful. Moving on to our next slide. Do you have the clicker, actually?
No clicker.
Awesome. Okay. I want everyone to direct their attention to this giant number on the screen, 68%. So this is a number from last year, but it's also very relevant this year. 68% of CS50 students have never taken CS before. How many of you currently have a Scratch account? For anyone that's been working on the PSET, yeah, everyone should basically have their hands raised. So I've had a lot of questions in the past 2 weeks or so. Hey, Veronica, it's cool that you're, you know, head CA. Tell me about your CS background. So in 11th grade, I took an intro to computer science class, a trimester long that was introduction to computer science with Scratch. So congratulations, right now, all of you are just as prepared for CS50 as I was just last year. Moving on to our next slide, these are some of the, I think, greatest statistics of the course. So this is your comfort level, and I think all of you have already been asked to sort of self-identify and figure out what group you might fit into at this point in the game. So the big blue Pac-Man-like shape that we're looking at is the amount of students that identify as less comfy, and that's about two-thirds of the class, and then we have about a fourth that identifies as somewhere in between, and then another big group that identifies as more comfortable. So CS50 is a very big class, and we have opportunities and resources for everyone on the spectrum, from less comfy to in between and to more comfy. And again, I was amongst those students less comfy, and I'm currently, I definitely would consider myself more comfy at this stage. And I'm sure that at the end of the class, you will agree with me. Okay, now I'll pass it up to Professor Malin.
Thanks, Veronica. So whereas lectures are meant, of course, to introduce concepts and material from the class, today is entirely functional to answer any questions that you all might have, to set expectations, and really give you a sense of the nuts and bolts of the class, and ultimately help you structure the following few weeks so that you can go into it comfortable, you can get off on the right foot, and ultimately succeed, whether you're less comfortable, more comfortable, or somewhere in between. And we bring up this quote, too, from the syllabus that I did mention last Friday, that indeed it is very much the case that what ultimately matters in the course is not where you end up relative to the people sitting next to you, but where you end up relative to yourself. And that is to say that ultimately, per the details we'll explore in just a little bit, the course's assessment is very much individualized. We get a sense of you from sections, from problem sets, from the quiz, from the final project, both at the beginning of the semester and then ultimately at the end of the semester, and very much take that delta ultimately into account, not just raw numbers alone. So realize that you're not at a disadvantage vis-a-vis students who might have indeed come into the course with more experience in you. So how to begin today on in the semester. If you haven't done these steps already, do so ultimately over the next couple of days. We'll post these slides. We'll post the video of today online, so you don't need to take notes unless you would like. But reviewing the course's website, in particular the syllabus that defines every aspect and policy and resource of the course, and ultimately read the FAQs, which have been crafted based on students past having asked similar questions. What are the course's expectations? One is to attend or watch all of the course's lectures. They'll take place on Friday mornings, as they were last week. We'll gradually start meeting a little later because we won't need the entire 2-hour and 45-minute block, which is crazy long. But we'll announce that in advance via email. This coming Friday, we'll still meet one more time at 9 a.m. so as to have everyone on the same page. But if you have some conflict or some sleep, watching online is indeed okay. But indeed, if you don't have a conflict because of another class, we would encourage you to come because we only have some 10 or 11 lectures in total. The goal is to bring everyone together just a few times during the semester to really introduce concepts in a shared space, and then break off into sections and office hours, and those to be defined in just a little bit. Beyond that, attending all sections. So this is indeed expected. Over the next few days, you'll be assigned to a section, more on that in a little bit, and attending those physically in person each week is indeed expected. Problem sets. This is what many CS classes call homework assignments. These are programming projects. Scratch is the first of those, and this coming Friday we'll release the next in another programming language called C, and those are some number of problems each week that you will somehow now solve using lessons learned from the previous week or weeks. Take one quiz at the end of the semester. It will be summative in the sense that we'll reflect on the material of the previous several weeks. And whereas the problem sets will be almost entirely focused on code and reinforcement of the past week or so's material, the quiz will meant to be reflective of the whole semester and more problem scenario oriented, more conceptual oriented to try to synthesize thoughts that you might sort of start to take for granted even as you're programming, but it will focus much, much, much less on the mechanics like problem sets. And then finally, and honestly, probably the most exciting and gratifying part of the course is the final project. In a nutshell, it's very much bookending the course like the Scratch project, and just like right now or quite soon, will you be creating most anything of interest to you in Scratch. Similarly, will you at semester's end be able to do that in C or in Python or in JavaScript or in SQL or in any number of other languages that you might not have even heard about as of today, but they will be more within your comfort zone in just a few weeks' time. And the final project is really the capstone of the class, where you'll present ultimately to classmates at the so-called CS50 fair, a glimpse of which you might recall from the video we emailed out earlier or showed at Visitas as well. And it's meant to bring together all that you've learned over the past 11 weeks. Grading, if curious, is how things are weighted. You'll spend most of your time realistically on problem sets. That's where most of the learning is going to happen. It's not going to happen just in lectures listening to someone like me. It's not going to happen just in sections interacting and asking questions. It really is going to be in the doing. And the lectures and the sections and the office hours are all meant to be a support structure that enable you to succeed at those. Similarly, will the quiz have some weight, but much less than the problem sets themselves, the final project, and then the more encompassing engagement, which is defined more formally in the syllabus. This is to say that engagement is the act of engaging with the course in any number of ways. It's not just mere presence. It can be participating in the course's online discussion forum, which will be posted later this week. It can be attending office hours, interacting and attending sections and or lectures and the like. It's meant to just capture the extent to which you're truly engaged in the course. But if you're a little on the shyer side or more gregarious side, that's fine. You can engage in different ways. There's no one measure for every one student. Beyond that, sat on sat is the default grading option of the class. This is similar in spirit to pass fail. It's more of a bureaucratic detail how it differs from pass fail. But essentially, sat is any grade that's C minus or higher, and unsat is below that. The course is graded like this by default, like freshman seminars, if you're in one now or recall them in the past. And the goal is to create an environment, a learning environment, in which it is safe to explore. I myself, as you may recall, only enrolled in CS50 because the professor at the time allowed me to take it pass fail before sat on sat existed. And it really helped me get over that hurdle. And it wasn't until I was several weeks into the course that I really kind of have my footing and realized, oh, I actually can do this. And I actually am more comfortable than I once thought. Sat on sat is meant to encourage students. But the only gotchas here are ultimately bureaucratic. There are a few concentrations that ultimately, if they're going to give you credit for CS50 concentration credit, you'll need ultimately within the next 5 weeks to switch status to letter grade. The FAQs explain exactly how to do that process. And there's some fine print when it comes to Gen Ed credit for depending on your year. Just to get a couple of FAQs out of the way, CS concentrators, or if you're aspiring to concentrate in CS, you can take it set on SAT. You do not, in fact, need to change it for letter grade. First years, if you're also in a freshman seminar, typically you can't take two courses set on SAT. That's not true with CS50. You may take CS50 and a freshman seminar set on SAT, and then ultimately see the FAQs on the website so that you're comfortable moving forward in the weeks ahead, changing as needed. Yeah?
If I want to take it set on SAT, but I still want to see how well I do, will I still see any grades?
Yeah, absolutely. So SAT on SAT is just the designation that ultimately appears on the transcript. You will get no less feedback throughout the semester than anyone else. We'll provide you with raw scores and qualitative feedback on your assignments. It's just that rather than seeing a letter, you'll see SAT or UNS on the transcript at the end. Other questions? No? All right. So to elaborate on some of this context, what does it mean to get any sort of grades in CS50 or in programming projects if you've never programmed before? Well, in CS50, the way we approach assessment and feedback is to evaluate problem sets that you submit, programs that you write, along three axes. Correctness, just does it do what the homework assignment asked you to make it do? Two is design, how well did you do it? So if you're more familiar, of course, with English essays or history essays or the like, where you're expressing yourself yourself more poetically, design would be like how well structured are your paragraphs? How well structured is your argument? Do you have, for instance, at the risk of oversimplifying, the sort of standard introduction in body and concluding paragraphs, or just some kind of flow to the document? We'll see that there's actually that similar kind of notion for code. It's one thing to get it working. Like, yes, you can get the words across and someone can fumble their way through a poorly written essays, but well designed would be, wow, this is a really effective argument and your language, your English prose or any language, flows better. Style is purely aesthetic. We are all in the habit of, when typing essays or even emails, of maybe hitting enter a few times here, using bulleted lists, tabbing, bold-facing things and the like, just aesthetic details that make things more readable. Programming code has the exact same characteristics, and we'll see once we move past Scratch into C and Python and other languages, there's just ways to format your code in a pretty way that other humans can then read better, and that's what we mean by style. Now, ultimately, getting things correct is the most challenging aspect, and getting rid of the so-called bugs or mistakes in a program, so you'll get more points or credit for the time invested in correctness. A factor of 3, for instance, times whatever your correctness score is, plus 2 times design, which is contributing to your ultimate result, but not necessarily as time-consuming. And then style means just keep things nice and pretty, which is pretty much the easiest of the 3 to do. So that's how we weight things, and ultimately a score emerges that gives you a sense of where things stand. The website elaborates on Gen Ed, but if you're graduating after 2019, Gen Ed is evolving constantly on campus. So if you're graduating after 2019, you can take CS50 SAT to fulfill the new science requirement, if familiar. And if you're graduating in 2019 this year, you can take CS50 to fulfill any of EMR, SLS, SPU, but you have to take it for a letter grade because of old rules that are still in place. All right. And let's forge ahead with the course itself. So one of the reasons I didn't take CS50 my freshman year was because I was frankly advised not to. It's so hard, it's so challenging, computer science I had never done before, and it was truly a field and a course in particular to beware. And indeed, it wasn't until sophomore year when, thanks to being able to take the course for something other than a letter grade and just stepping foot in the class and shopping it and really getting a taste for what computer science was when taught in an environment like CS50 and not necessarily focused entirely on code, as I think a lot of high school experiences tend to be, where it's heads down on keyboards and much less collaborative and much less social. The reality is there's a lot of advice that even I got to the contrary. And I don't think this is a productive use of anyone's time on campus, whether it's CS, computer science, or really any unfamiliar field. And so I would encourage you to keep that in mind, especially when you consider, too, that a lot of the advice that goes on campus is also a trailing window from when people have taken the course in the past. And for instance, just a couple of years ago, did we very consciously rethink some of the curriculum, given that the students coming into the class were increasingly less comfortable, less experienced, and so forth. And so did we recalibrate exactly what we were, how we were presenting material and how problem sets were designed. So whereas in 2014 and 15, this is a graph just depicting students' evaluation those years of how difficult the course and its homework assignments were, where purple was a 5 on a 5-point scale, like very difficult, and blue was very easy, and the colors in between are somewhere in between, 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s. You'll see that as of a couple of years ago, the messaging has changed, and so the number of students claiming that the course is very difficult, or a 5, is much more in the range where we've wanted it to be. So realize, too, that this is the very latest data and very latest reassurances. Workload as well, to paint a picture, those same 2 years, 2014 and 15, a couple years ago, like purple suggests, okay, that's a lot of work, per the legend up here, 14 or more hours per week. There, too, did we recalibrate, given the comfort levels of students coming in, and now things, I think, are a little more balanced. So realize, too, take into account these kinds of data points, which are also on the course's FAQs page as you decide what kind of workload to take on this semester and beyond. As for the number of hours, it's entirely dependent on students. It's entirely dependent on how busy their own weeks and their own lives are. It's sometimes dependent on the problem sets themselves. For instance, this chart here captures on the y-axis the number of hours on average students were spending on each of the week's homework assignments or problem sets. This x-axis labels each of the problem sets themselves. So you'll see that Scratch tends to be in like the 4-hour range, but with high variance. Some students will spend a couple of hours. Some might spend 8 or 10 hours, especially if they just really get into into it. And so keep in mind, too, that a lot of students do find themselves kind of loving what it is they're doing or getting themselves truly immersed in writing a program or building some software. And so some of the hours driven are typically by choice, wanting to add things and add features and get things working, not necessarily that we expect as much here. Sometimes we roll out new problem sets that we realize, okay, that was a little easier than the previous one, and that's fine. Sometimes with problem set 7, which is the first real web-based problem sets, do students really get into it? So again, it's highly variable. But we generally say by mid-semester, you know, 12 or more hours a week is not uncommon, but that is in the context of all of the various support resources that Brian will give us a tour of in just a little bit as well. But that'll help you get a sense of what it is you're taking on in the semester. And while, for instance, our advice would typically be, for any student, you know, taking 4 problem set based courses in a semester is probably a lot, whether CS50 is one of them or not. You know, balancing your workload in general, freshman year or beyond, is probably a good thing, taking 1 or 2, maybe 3 PSET based courses, and then kind of counterbalancing it just for your own sanity and your own sort of context switches with other material and topics is just generally a good thing as well. So keep that in mind. And many students very often take multiple quantitative classes their freshman year and beyond, one of which might very well be CS50. And the course recognizes this effort, and again, that delta. So if you're curious as to see last year's grade distribution at the end of the semester, 51% of students were ultimately in the A range, either A or A minus. 26% of students in the course last year received SAT, which again is that range of C minus or higher, but it tends to skew toward the higher end. 13% B plus and B, 3% B minus, a few in the C plus plus, C plus range, C plus plus is the language. And then honestly, things like ease, which is an F in Harvard speak, or unset, do tend to correlate really with personally extenuating circumstances, medical issues, or the like. So those tend to be outliers, not for reasons that students tried and failed. So that too is available on the course's website if you'd like to look a little closer. But keep in mind that the message there is that provided students do put in the time and take advantage of the resources in CS50, like almost every student does succeed relative to his or her prior background, or lack thereof. So a word on academic honesty, with which some of you, if upperclassmen, might be familiar. CS50 has the distinction of probably referring to Harvard's Honor Council more students most year than any other course, which is to say we notice that students have somehow inappropriately collaborated on homework assignments. They've turned in the work, claimed with their name on it that this is mine and my own. We then decide that no, this is statistically very unlikely to be yours alone based on what we're seeing, and then we refer the matter to the Honor Council, which is Harvard's disciplinary board, if unfamiliar, that then takes the case from there and decides things more independently. This is not because CS students or CS50 students are any less honest than any others. Just the reality is, in a computer science course that's very software focused, all of whom whose teachers are all very technical themselves, we just have software that helps us do this. And indeed, just to put the numbers into perspective, do we take all of the homework assignments from this year and from past years and run it through software that essentially just compares every homework submission against every other automatically? So for instance, a year or so ago, did we start, if you add up all the students times all of the homework assignments times all of the files they submitted, it's a lot of files, like 5.1 million comparisons of files side by side. After that, the software flags, so to speak, maybe 200 pairs that look a little too similar, just statistically, at which point we humans then take over, and usually 2 or 3 of us, a sort of funnel of us, review, whittling down the list a couple years ago from 200 potentially worrisome matches to just 140 to ultimately 40 total cases that we decided, yeah, a line here was crossed, and so it's worth someone taking an independent look at things here. But that's 40 cases out of, you know, 5.1 million initial comparisons, and while it does end up being between 3 to 10% of students ultimately realize there are ultimately so many mechanisms in place to avoid this being the outcome, which is why we mention this now at the start of the semester so folks can be mindful of exactly what structure is in place and what expectations there are. So in the syllabus, the URL for which was on one of those very first slides, there's a formal definition of what we mean by academic honesty, and it's customized for the course and its software focus. In essence, it does boil down to be reasonable. Now, that can be interpreted, of course, in any number of ways, and that's why the policy elaborates on it in any number of bullets in the syllabus itself. But what this really means is that at the end of the day, most of us probably have an intuitive sense of what it means to sort of hand in an essay or eventually a computer program and be able to comfortably claim I did this versus someone else really did this for me. And what we try to do in the syllabus is characterize where the line is between those two scenarios. And for instance, one of the heuristics we offer is this. When asking for help, if you're writing a program and you have a bug, a mistake, as all of us will in the coming few weeks, you may show your code to a friend or a classmate who's in the class. Say, hey, would you mind taking a look at this, especially if that friend or classmate is maybe a bit more comfortable with you or is a little further along than you. Like, that's okay, so long as he or she then provides sort of pedagogically compelling advice. You know, did you consider doing this? Or, oh, I ran into a problem like that and I solved it this way. Right? Like, most of us would decide that that is actually learning, and even though you are collaborating verbally in English or whatever language, like, that feels like the right way to go about getting better at something. Where the line is crossed is that you, if you're the one struggling, the solution to your problem should not be to just look at that friend or that classmate's code, where then you're just sort of visually transcribing whatever he or she did into your own work. And that's what we try to do in the syllabus and in the coming weeks, is to help students kind of appreciate what that difference is so that you feel supported not just by the staff but by classmates, and ultimately feel comfortable forging ahead, because there is no reason ultimately to get caught up in this gauntlet so long as you avail yourself of this process and a couple of other supports. Yes? Yeah, absolutely. Yes, so subject to the same heuristics that I've summarized here and are in the syllabus. Absolutely. And indeed, we encourage and we even provide ourselves tutoring, which is akin to exactly that same thing with former students. So, what if things go wrong? Like, the reality is, at some point this term or at some point in college, if not at multiple points in the past, have all of us had a particularly stressful night or late night, and maybe you just have a lot of work or you're under very little sleep or you've got personal or medical or family issues that are just really weighing on your mind, and the last thing, frankly, you care about is submitting some damn like homework assignment that just doesn't rank as high among those other things, especially if you're sort of borderline tears or stressed or just not eating. I mean, there's many things that can go wrong. And the reality is, both in high school and college, like, these are opportunities to learn how to sort of manage these situations and sort of make better decisions. But the reality is, many students will not always make the right decision, and that's fine. Those themselves are teachable moments. And so within CS50 are two clauses, so to speak. The English language is there in more detail, but they're distilled under these titles, regret clause. So if, for instance, you are among those handful of students every semester in CS50 and surely in other classes, where you make some stupid late night decision, it's 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 4 a.m., and you Google more than you should. You start copying and pasting from someone else's work. You submit a roommate's work or look at his or her computer or cross one of the lines that is enumerated in the syllabus. That happens, and that will happen, and that has happened in every year I've taught the class. If, though, upon waking up or getting some sleep and some food and some perspective within 3 days, 72 hours that the syllabus defines, you ultimately wake up and you wonder, like, damn, like, what did I do? Historically, in most classes, there's no mechanism to sort of own up to that without some utter fear of, like, what that outcome might be. But institutionalized within CS50 is this clause, whereby within 72 hours, if you wake up after some rest, after some perspective, maybe some thought or chat with a friend about how to handle the situation, and you come forward confidentially to me or one of the course's heads and own up to the situation, meeting us halfway, we may very well still zero the homework assignment in question, but we're not going to refer it to the honor council or for disciplinary action. We'll have more of a one-on-one conversation about it, see if we can get you the resources within the class or outside of the class that you might need, whether that's academic or mental health related or the like, and we will help you solve that problem in a way that is constructive and not punitive. So keep that in mind if you are among those who do make that late night or any time mistake. The brink clause, meanwhile, if you don't quite cross that line, but you realize, damn it, like, I feel like the only solution now at 11:58 p.m., 1 minute shy of the homework assignment's deadline, is to cross some line, or to just, I'm going to submit the file that I found online, or my roommate's file, or the like, and we, as a policy, tend not to grant extensions, except in cases of emergency, we will consider that sort of emotion, that sort of placement, that sort of mindset as an emergency. And if you do reach out to me or the course's heads via an email, even if it is at 11:58 p.m., and you say, hey, I know the problem set's due in a minute. I know that my work is not complete. I really don't want to do something stupid. Can we please work something out? Then fine. Despite the language in the syllabus about no extensions and such, will we work with you and figure that problem out as well? All that we ask, ultimately, is that you own up and you kind of meet us halfway. Any questions on those two? No? All right. So, Usually around this point in class, we put up a picture of like a cute little cat or something, but I didn't do that today, just to kind of break the mood. So instead, allow me to bring up CS50's head teaching fellow, Brian, to actually bring a lighter touch and a more concrete touch as to what to do here on out to succeed in CS50. Definitionally, for many of you who are first years, what are these various resources that a lot of the upperclassmen and the course of staff just take for granted? And what should you do each day or each week to just make sure that you're feeling really good about how each week went and ultimately the semester? Brian.
All right, thank you. So goal of the rest of the orientation today is going to be talking about how to succeed in CS50, what the resources that we make available to you are within the course, and how best to take advantage of them and use them. Because really the most important thing is realizing that there are a whole lot of resources available to you, so that any week if you're struggling with particular concepts or finding particular material difficult, know that there are a whole bunch of resources for regardless of how you learn best that you can take advantage of, and the goal today is to introduce those to you so you can see them, ask any questions you may have about them. So, the first resource you'll want to take advantage of in any given week is, of course, the lecture, which is going to be Friday mornings. And so we're expecting that the best thing to do is to make sure that you're attending or watching that week's lecture. If you can make it in person between 9 and 11:45, that we won't necessarily use that whole time every single week, that's great. If you can't make it, totally okay, but definitely watch that lecture online, because that's going to be the main way by which you're getting an introduction to the course's material. This is the material that's going to show up on the problem set for the coming week. So make sure that you're watching and taking advantage of that lecture. And in addition to just the lecture video, there are a whole bunch of resources related to the lecture that we make available to you as well. So in addition to the video, we also provide notes on that week's lecture. So we know that sometimes in lecture, it might be a distraction, or it might be difficult to be multitasking, to be watching lecture and paying attention to what's going on screen, while at the same time trying to jot down notes about what's happening. So in order to help you with that, one of our course's staff takes the process of watching the lecture and writing up notes, making them publicly available online for you, such that you don't need to worry about taking notes unless you would like to during lecture, and you can just focus on watching lecture, trying to absorb the material, and then if you'd like to later, go back and review the notes that will be posted online within a couple days of the lecture. So if you go to cs50.harvard.edu and you click on curriculum on the left-hand side, you'll see a list of all of the weeks in the course. Right now only week zero has happened, so that one will be a link. And if you click on the week zero link, you'll see all of the resources that are related to this week, and you'll notice right up at the very top is a link that says notes. And if you click on that notes link, what that'll take you to is a page that's just going to be a notated version of a description of all the things that were happening in the lecture. So this is great for reviewing. We still recommend that you actually watch the lecture, because not all of the material from the lecture is going to be word for word in the notes, but definitely a useful resource, especially if there was a particular topic in the lecture that you wanted to go back and review. You can look to the notes as a resource for that as well. So in addition to the video and the notes, we also make available the lecture slides from the lecture if that's helpful to you. And we make available the source code, any of the code examples that were used in lecture, and I'll show you where to find those in a moment, and also the transcript for the lecture. So if you wanted to go back and watch the lecture video, either because you weren't able to make it to lecture or just because you wanted to review it, if you go to the week zero page, you can click on the video link here at the bottom. That's going to open up this video player, which you can use in order to watch the entire lecture from there. But a very useful feature is if you go to the right side of this video player, we have here a search bar and an outline view. So you can see here on the right-hand side a description of all of the big topics that we talked about over the course of the lecture. So if you remember that over the course of lecture, there was one topic when we started talking about Unicode that was confusing to you, you can find the section on Unicode and just jump straight there in the lecture to just watch that section. And this also, in this outline view, includes a transcript of the lecture. So if you remember there was a particular word or phrase that was confusing to you, and I want to find when in lecture there was mention of Scratch, for instance, you can just search Scratch and not there yet, but eventually there will be a transcript via which you can find the places where that was used in lecture and click on that, and that'll take you directly to that point in the lecture too. So you can definitely do that. If you find that lecture is going a little bit too slow, down in the lower right-hand corner of the screen, here, you'll see that you can you can speed up the pace of lecture to go at 2x speed if you want to. If you find the lecture is going too fast, you can slow down the lecture to 3/4 speed. You can download the lecture to your computer for offline viewing if you'd like to as well. So this video player is a lot more than just a place where you can watch the lecture. You also have a great outline view where you can go to the different parts of the lecture, search for parts of the lecture, change the pace of it in order to make sure it's tuned to how you learn best. So questions about the lecture resources that are available?
Yeah,
And again, back on this page, we also have a link that'll take you to the slides for that week's presentation, and also links to where you can download any of the code that was used if you want to take a look at it, play around with it, make some changes. That'll be especially be helpful starting next week when we start diving into C and eventually move into other languages as well. Yeah. Great question. Question was about turnaround time between when lecture is and when things are posted. So the lecture is live streamed. So immediately after lecture, even during lecture, you can be watching the lecture live. But we'll take a couple days in order to process it, get the notes prepared, get the transcript prepared. So it'll be a couple days before all of those resources are available. But the video itself will be available immediately. Other questions about lecture? All right. Moving on then. And finally, as David mentioned a moment ago, we won't always use the 9 to 11:45 block. So some weeks, probably starting next week or a little later, we'll be starting closer to 10 a.m. This week for Friday's lecture, we'll still start at 9 a.m. But in the future, just await an email. We might be starting a little bit later. Maybe you can get a little more sleep on Thursday night. So stay tuned for more information about that. The next important thing about structuring your week is attending section. So by the end of this week, all of you will be assigned to a section. And what a section is it's an opportunity to meet in a smaller group and get a little more individualized attention, a little bit more hands-on practice with the material that happened in the prior week's lecture. So what will happen is this Friday, for instance, we'll introduce the programming language C. And then the following Monday or Tuesday of next week, you'll go to a section where rather than being in a lecture hall of hundreds of people, you'll be in a smaller setting with a teaching fellow, a member of our course staff, and about a dozen or a few more other students. And together, you'll be working on going over the past week's material, getting any questions or areas of confusion answered. It's a great opportunity to be asking questions and interacting because you're in a little bit of a smaller environment where it might be a little bit easier to get feedback and get more hands-on practice. And so section's really an opportunity to ask questions, get hands-on experience with the topics from lecture, make sure that you have resolved any areas of confusion, and making sure that you're feeling comfortable enough with that material so that you can really dive into that week's problem set. So sections will be on Mondays or Tuesdays. And as laid out in the syllabus, you're expected to attend your section every week. However, we know that sometimes you have conflicts and can't attend a particular section, or you might know of a staff member whose teaching style you really resonate with. So although we do require you to attend section every week, it's understood that you might not always be able to make your own assigned section. And so it's totally OK for you to attend any section that you wish. Up on the course website, we'll post a schedule of all of the sections and what time they're in, what comfort level they're in, and where they'll be. And you should feel more than welcome to attend any section that you would like during the week. If you'd like to, you can even attend multiple sections. But we just expect that you attend one section per week on Monday or Tuesday. That can be your assigned one, but could also be another one as well. And those sections are broken up by comfort level. So on the sectioning form that you should have filled out by now, but if you haven't already, please fill it out by the end of the day today. You should have indicated your comfort level, either less comfortable or more comfortable or somewhere in between. And in your section, you'll be placed with other students that are also of a similar comfort level. So if you're among those less comfortable, which is totally OK, not to worry. You're not going to be surrounded by people that have been doing this for years. You'll also be surrounded by people that are similarly less comfortable, that are similarly new to computer science and the ideas involved with programming. And if you are among those more comfortable, you don't need to worry about being bored in section because you'll also be in a section of those who are also more comfortable. Those sections tend to dive into material that goes a little bit beyond the scope of the course and move at a slightly faster pace. And so the sections are designed to be tuned to the comfort level of the students in the section. And so hopefully that will make it a positive experience and a useful experience for everyone when you're attending section. And the section leaders, our teaching fellows, should be making available their slides and source code. But if they don't, feel free to always email your teaching fellow at any point to ask them to provide that information to you. They'll be more than happy to do so. So questions about section before I move on? OK. The next useful resource to take advantage of, in addition to lecture and section, which are both designed to introduce material and help you go over that material, are office hours. So every week on Friday, for most Fridays, we'll assign a problem set that will typically be due the following Thursday. So you'll have about a week to work on each problem set. And if, as you're working on that problem set, chances are you're going to run into some issues that you're struggling with, a couple bugs that you're having trouble resolving, or maybe you have some conceptual understanding issue with the problem set and you're not entirely sure how to begin it or how to approach it. internship. And for that, we have office hours, which are opportunities to meet individually with staff members in order to get answers to your questions, whether they're conceptual questions about what's going on with a particular concept that's involved with the problem set, or if you're working on the problem set and there's a particular issue that's got you stuck, the goal of office hours is really for teaching fellows and course assistants to be able to come help unstick you, to help resolve whatever area of confusion you might have so that you can keep going and continue working on that problem set. And so within CS50, we offer two different types of office hours. So the first are the large-scale office hours. These are generally held at a larger venue and are an opportunity where we generally send dozens of our staff to these large-scale office hours and are opportunities for you to really sit down in the evenings or in the afternoons on some Sundays and work together with other students or get help from the teaching staff in a larger setting. And so those large-scale office hours happen three times a week. First will be on Sundays between 3 and 5 p.m. Those locations will vary, though most of the time will be in the SoCH up in the quad. Large-scale office hours will also be held on Monday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. in Widener Library, and also on Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. in Widener Library as well. So we'll have a lot of staff at those office hours, and it'll be an opportunity for you to, we'll have walkthroughs during those large-scale office hours where if you're not even sure where to start, some teaching staff members will be able to lead a small group and explain how to start thinking about the problem set, where to begin with that problem set, and you can also get one-on-one help on individual problems as well. Though we know that sometimes these times don't always work for everyone, and you might not be free Monday or Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. because of other commitments you may have, and so we also offer smaller-scale office hours, which are held at a smaller location, namely the HSA office on Mount Auburn Street, up on the fourth floor. And usually we'll just have a couple of staff members there, but we'll try to staff that for most of the day on most days of the week, such that at any time, either between classes or if you have some free time on a particular day and you want to spend some time working on CS50 but would like to get some help, you can just drop in on these small scale office hours where a couple of staff will be there to try and help you out with the issues that you're coming across. And we offer these small scale office hours quite frequently throughout the week. So Monday through Saturday at the HSA office, right by Insomnia Cookies on the fourth floor. You can go up there and you can get help from the staff members who are there. And so if you're ever wondering when office hours are, if you go to cs50.harvard.edu on the homepage, scroll down on the left sidebar and click on office hours, you'll see a Google Calendar come up and you'll see a listing of all the office hours that are coming up and where those office hours are going to be. So for instance, if you're working on problem set zero scratch right now and you're looking for some additional help, you can see that today from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the HSA office on the fourth floor of 67 Mount Auburn Street, we'll be holding office hours there. So if you're looking for help with that, you can do that, and you can look ahead to future weeks as well to see where and when office hours will be taking place. So definitely feel free to take advantage of office hours. It's a great way to help you get unstuck, especially if it's something that might be relatively simple that you're stuck on. Oftentimes, just getting a second pair of eyes, having a staff member walk you through a concept can really, really be helpful. Questions about office hours? Okay, a couple other resources I just wanted to mention. One is CS50 Discourse. So Discourse is an online discussion platform, which is a way for you to be posting questions or answering questions online. And so we'll make this available later this week. You'll log in using your GitHub username and password, and it'll be a place where you can ask questions about that week's lecture, about topics related to that week's problem set, such that even if you aren't able to make it physically to office hours, you can still ask questions and get responses from other students or from the staff. And if you'd like to, you can also browse through other questions that other students have asked and see the answers that have been made there as well. So it's an online discussion platform that's designed to offer question and answer services online between you and the course's staff and other students. And so definitely be on the lookout for that later this week too. And finally, if you need even more, or if you think you would benefit from even more one-on-one assistance, CS50 also offers tutoring. And so tutoring is an opportunity where you can work in small groups, usually in groups of maybe one staff member to three students, it's not meant to be a replacement for office hours, which is really focused on helping you work on your problem sets and figuring out what issues are there. But if there are conceptual things that you're wondering about, or you want to get more clarification on things that were talked about in lecture or section, and you want to go over that lecture's topic again in order to get some more clarification there, you can request by emailing the course heads in some tutoring in smaller groups, and we can set that up for you with one of the course staff in order to help give you additional advice and support and resources there as well. So that's something you can definitely take advantage of that's entirely free of charge. in terms of what the support structure looks like for the staff, we have a lot of staff members that are available on hand to help you either in section or in office hours or via the course's online discussion platform. We have 43 teaching fellows who will be leading your sections and as well as helping in office hours, and 41 course assistants who will be dedicated to helping you in office hours. That comes out to a grand total of 334 staff hours of office hours per week this year. So there's a lot of resources and a lot of opportunity to get help from the staff. So it is a big class, but lots of opportunity to get help over the course of the week as you're working on trying to understand the lecture contents and trying to make your way through those problem sets. And last year, we also offered 147 tutoring sessions. They generally had a student to staff ratio of about 3 to 1. So if that's something you think you would benefit from too, that's definitely a resource that is available to you as well. So all of the staff are really, really excited to be working with you. You'll hopefully get to see a whole bunch of them in section and in office hours, and know that they are a resource available to you. You should feel free to email them. If you go to the course website on the staff page, you can email any of the course staff with questions that you may have or things that you're wondering about. So definitely feel free to take advantage of that as well. In addition to that, we also offer a lot of tools in CS50 that are non-human resources, software-based tools or websites that you can take advantage of in order to help you as you work through concepts or work through problems. I'm going to just go briefly over these because you'll learn more about them over the course of the upcoming weeks. But CS50 IDE and CS50 Lab and CS50 Sandbox are websites that you can go to where you can be writing code such that you don't need to have your computer set up in a particular way to be able to start programming. You can use one of those tools that we make available to you to write code and save code and run some programs. CS50 Reference is going to be a website that you might take advantage of that will give you access to some of the common programming functions that you might be using. So now remember that in Scratch, there were a whole bunch of functions that you could use, like say or move, that you could use. Once we start programming in C, there are going to be even more functions that are at your disposal, and sometimes it can be hard to keep track of them. And CS50 Reference is a website that has a collection of all of those functions that you might commonly use and give you a way to search through them and understand how it is that they work, such that you can use them in your own program. I already talked about Discourse, which is a tool that you can use for online question and answer with other students and with the course staff. And we also have a number of other software tools that you can take advantage of. We'll introduce these over the course of lectures and sections, but just to briefly put them on your radar, Check 50 is a tool that you can use to automatically check your code for correctness to see whether or not it does what the program is supposed to do. You should definitely still be testing your code on your own, running your code, and making sure that it works for yourself, but Check 50 can be a helpful supplemental resource to use in that capacity as well. Debug 50 is a very useful tool that lets you step through your code. So if you ever find that you've got a bug in your program, which will inevitably happen over the course of the semester, Debug 50 is a great tool that you can use in order to try and nail down where in your code that bug is coming from. And you'll see examples of that in lecture 2. Help 50 is a great tool if ever your program is running into errors. If you're having an error just trying to run your program or compile your program, and we'll learn what that means later on this week, you can use Help 50 to try and take those somewhat convoluted messages that you might see and interpret them in a more understandable way. And again, more on that soon. Style 50 is a way to check the style of your code to make sure that it's styled well. Recall that all your problems are graded on correctness and design and style. And at first, if it's a little unclear what it means for code to be well styled, Style 50 can be a tool that you can use in order to assess how well styled your program is. And it'll give you some advice and suggestions for how to improve the style of your program too. And finally, Submit 50 is a tool that you'll be using in order to submit each week's problem set. And know that for every problem set, if you go to that problem sets page, so for instance, if we go to week 0 and go to problem set 0, there'll be a home page for that problem set. There will be a lot of instructions that are going to give you a lot of the same material. So on how to get help, if you're wondering how to get help on a particular problem set, this is going to be a link that'll take you to the office hours page, the email address of the course heads if you need additional resources than that. And finally, at the bottom, the submission instructions for how to submit that assignment, which will include what you need to do in order to make sure that you've submitted the assignment correctly. So in addition to the wide array of human tools that we make available to you in section and office hours and lecture and more, we also have a lot of software-based tools that are resources for you to use as well. No need to worry if you didn't totally get what all of those are. Slowly over the course of the semester, we'll start to introduce these as they become relevant, and you'll get experience and practice with them in sections as well. Questions about any of that, the resources and tools that are available? Yeah.
Checks in Check 50, should we be confident that, like, it's correct? You know what I mean?
Good question. The question is, if the code meets all of the checks in Check 50, can you be confident that it's correct? Not for sure. So Check 50 is a good heuristic. If you're passing the checks in Check 50, that probably means that you're on the right track, certainly, and you're doing the right things. But Check 50 certainly doesn't check everything. And so it's still very important that you're running and testing your own code, that you're checking it for bugs, that you're thinking about what corner cases might arise there as well. Other questions? Yes. Good question. The question was, do I need to cite CS50 reference if it's something that I'm using in my own code? Generally speaking, if you're using a CS50 resource, whether it's CS50 reference or like talking to your teaching fellow, that's not something you need to cite. But if ever you're looking up something on some other website, for instance, in order to get conceptual understanding, or if you're talking to collaborating with someone who is not like a member of the course heads, that's something that you should probably cite when you submit the assignment. Good question. Other things? Okay, I'll turn it back over to David.
So as we rattle off these many resources, I'm reminded of MIT has this tradition of MIT Hacks, where once a year one of the classes does something interesting and hopefully for the ages to campus. And there's one fire hose water fountain that I'm always reminded of that looks like this from some years ago before photos were color. And they had wired up, so this was 1999. I'm pretty sure we had color then. But 1991, the MIT students connected a water fountain to a fire hydrant. And even though this is very pixelated, to borrow a term from this past week, it said something like, getting an education from MIT is like drinking water from a fire hose, which is to say that there's just so much volume coming out of it, not unlike what you've probably just experienced here. And so let me reassure that as this orientation meeting is subtitled, it really is how to CS50. Since every year there's all too many students who make it to the end of the semester and say to us quite literally, damn, I didn't know there was an online discussion forum, or oh, I could have gone to more intimate office hours during the week, or oh, I didn't realize I could go to another teaching fellows section when I had a conflict myself. And so the goal of today is not to suggest that in addition to lecture and that you have to attend 43 sections a week and 300 plus office hours and just generally consume all of these resources, but really to lay out what is a menu of options. The reality is that everyone in this room, just like we before you, learn in different ways, and invariably everyone in this room will find different things more useful than others, and different times of the day and different days of the week more conducive to their own learning and to their own peace setting and to their own lives. And so the reality is that everything you've seen here is just to ensure that every one of the students in the class has some combination of resources that works best for him and her, and so that you know what is indeed available to you. But in general, the pattern is attend or watch lecture on Fridays. Dive into your section on Monday or Tuesday. Dive into the homework assignment. And then if you need it, take advantage of any number of these other resources. Are there any questions then about CS50 or beyond? Yeah. No, on Thursdays. There's two problem sets they'll be due on Tuesdays because they're a little smaller than the other ones. One will be mid-semester, just to give us a bit of a break. But the others will be due on Thursdays at 11:59 p.m. Good question. Others, yeah?
Yeah, so I've heard a lot of people that CS50 gets a whole lot harder, like at the same time the ad drop deadline happens. So I was wondering,
I don't know. I mean, honestly, this is this weird rumor that exists because it certainly is not in our own best interest to trick people into staying into the class and then being unhappy with us for the subsequent 6 weeks. So this really is more rumor than fact. The reality is the homework difficulty, if the fifth week or so was around PSET 5, I mean, last year it kind of went down after the fifth Monday, and so that's why this is kind of more lore than anything. I think the reality is with this course, like many, is that as you get more background and you get more practice, we can sort of, we can begin to assume more sophistication in the problems and things get a little more challenging. And that's why indeed Scratch is meant to be a gentler introduction to certain concepts and a very safe way to explore concepts. But at some point our expectations start to rise, but also your capabilities and your preparations start to arise. And the reality is that CS50 is absolutely more work than some courses on campus. And that's why we disclose the workload and the difficulty so people can kind of balance it with the rest of their life, both extracurricularly and academically. But frankly, I've personally of the mindset, and having gone through this class and others, that like the more you sort of immerse yourself in just that handful of like very special and hopefully memorable experiences in college academically, just the so much more that you get out of it. And that's our hope ultimately. Yes, it's probably more work than a lot of classes students might take, but we hope that the returns are as high and that we as the course, per all of these bullets and resources we've enumerated, are really willing to meet you more than halfway. So as to the ratcheting up after the fifth Monday, I mean, it's definitely not an intentional thing, and I'm not sure it actually is borne out by the data of your year. Other questions down here?
Yeah, are you grading problems at zero by the correctness design and style?
Just correctness, but even then just fairly loosely, to be honest.
Like design and style, we shouldn't worry about that.
No, not at all, because we haven't even defined those, and they're not meant to go back tonight now and say, my puzzle pieces were all over the place. Like, that's totally fine, and that's why it will vary by problem set, but correctness. So it's the kind of thing where we're really comparing apples and oranges with Scratch projects, too, so we're going to focus more on the aggregate effect. But as you'll see, we'll ultimately assess a lot of projects on five-point scales, where 3 is by definition good, 4 is better, 5 is best, and then 1 and 2 are poor and fair. And the reality is it's our hope and it's our deliberate calibration that at the beginning of the semester most people should be getting 3s. That's good. And even though if you do the quick math, well, wait a minute, 3 out of 5, 60, oh my god, that's an F. Like, it's not, or a D. It's not. It's not meant to be that. It's meant to be truly the semantics of good, and the hope is then to give every student some room to grow so that he or she over the course of the semester is getting a few more betters by the middle of the semester and then a few bests by the end. Otherwise, if you're getting bests all from the outset, kind of calls into question what we're all doing here, I think. If there's no room to grow. Other questions? Yeah, in the middle.
If you get a Bureau of Study Council tutor, how does that work with citing and academic honesty? How can they help you differently?
Sure. If you have a BSC tutor, which is the Bureau of Study Council on campus, which helps coordinate across classes tutoring resources, I mean, when in doubt, just cite. And you'll see, like Scratch, we didn't show this in class, but you can actually add little sticky notes even to Scratch projects, which are called comments. C and Python and these other languages to which I've alluded also have a way of typing human-friendly comments that have nothing to do with code. When in doubt, say, I worked with a tutor who helped me understand X or Y or Z topic. But generally, we expect citations per the syllabus when it is something more technical than that. But again, when in doubt, just cite it and move on. Don't need to think about it too hard in that case. Other questions? Anything at all? Anything from Veronica or Brian? All right.
Go to lecture. I do have something. Go to lecture. I went to almost all the lectures, would always sit in like the third row, and they are a lot of fun.
Thank you. So. Yes, and back. Totally fine. Just come and go and minimize the impact on others is fine. Other questions? All right, so we'll next see each other, ideally this Friday at 9. Subsequent weeks, we'll meet a little later. Welcome to CS50 and stick around if you have any questions. Thanks.